The House Workforce Development Committee will come to order. Lee Baker, can I get you to motion approval of the minutes for January 18, 2023?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any discussions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. All right, members. First on our, the only item on our agenda this morning is House File 2. And we have Representative Ruth Richardson. So I will move the House File 2 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Members, we have a long list of testifiers and several amendments to discuss in this hearing, and we'll be making sure that we take the final vote by 10 a.m. this morning. There is a DE1 author's amendment, and I will move the adoption of the DE1 amendment. Representative Richardson, welcome to the committee and explain your DE1 amendment before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we do a quick walkthrough of the DE2 amendment, I just had some opening remarks I'd like to share. So House File 2, as amended, would establish a state-paid family leave medical program. No matter who you are, where you work, where you live, what you look like, or who you love, working people's need for family and medical leave is universal. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, only an estimated 13% of workers have access to paid family leave through their employer to care for a new child or a seriously ill family member. Less than half of Minnesotans have access to personal medical leave. The United States ranks last among other nations for leave. In fact, among 41 nations, the U.S. is the only country without a paid leave program. What we have nationally and here in Minnesota is an uneven safety net with significant gaps. That means most of Minnesota's families are falling through the cracks. The research is clear. Access to paid leave contributes to healthy development of little ones and improves outcomes for older adults who need care. It improves maternal health, reduces reliance on taxpayer-funded safety net programs, and enhances economic security. And make no mistake, there are significant costs we as a state and nation are bearing without access to paid family leave, including being home to the worst disparities in maternal and infant health among high economy countries, with full knowledge that the vast majority of those deaths are preventable. Comprehensive paid family and medical leave not only recognizes the humanity of people and improves a myriad of health outcomes, it also keeps people in the labor force, boosting our local economy and the entire U.S. economy. All workers experience illness of a family member or illness at some point in their lives, and access to paid leave should not be dictated by your gender, the color of your skin, your zip code, whether you work for a large or small employer, nor should it be denied to you because of your job title. We need to abandon the harmful narrative that only some people are worthy of or deserve to have their humanity recognized and receive paid leave. Because the current system that we have is leaving out the most vulnerable Minnesotans. The irony of this is that those with higher incomes and with the ability to navigate a leave are in fact the people most likely to have access to a paid leave program. Access to paid family leave is leaving out the lowest paid workers with the greatest needs, and it's also leaving behind younger workers. Women are being left out at disproportionate rates. Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color are being left out. And no one should have to choose between a paycheck or caring for themselves and their family. And when faced with that choice, all too often, people are opting out of the workforce. In fact, research confirms caregiving responsibilities are a significant driver of exit from the labor force. Research consistently shows across race, gender, economic status, age, political affiliation, there is wide support for a comprehensive paid family and medical leave program. Nationally, over 70% of small businesses support a publicly administered paid family leave program, and paid family leave programs are also incredibly popular across party lines. 84% of voters support paid family leave programs. And research also shows that the cost of inaction on paid leave programs is costing the U.S. economy over $22 billion annually. To be clear, there's a moral, health, and safety, and economic imperative for our state to Act to implement a paid leave program. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to yield my time to my author testifier, who will provide a brief overview of the amendment.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Zhang, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. In my prior role at the University of Minnesota, I led a nationally recognized research team that conducted Minnesota's legislatively mandated design and implementation study under contract with DEED. I'll spend just a few minutes this morning grounding the committee in the program structure at a high level and be available later for specific questions as helpful. So House File 2 sets up a statewide, publicly administered insurance program that is self-funded and sustainable over the long term through contributions from workers and employers. It allows self-employed people and independent contractors to join the program and employers to provide a comparable program. Eligibility is based on workforce participation, and healthcare providers certify the need for leaves and the length of leaves in most cases. Much of the program is designed to build on Minnesota's successful UI processes as well as the infrastructure built in several other states. So among the design options, this one was chosen for a variety of reasons. I'll lift up just three. First of all, it is a portable benefit, wage replacement benefit, especially important for workers with multiple employers or those changing jobs. Second, it creates the broadest possible risk pool, a feature necessary to keep costs low and level the playing field among employers. And finally, it is the proven, effective, sustainable model that gives all workers an opportunity to earn and count on the benefit from year to year and makes costs currently borne by both employers and workers predictable. While the bill, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the design elements, the policy elements. While the bill provides up to 12 weeks for medical and up to 12 weeks for family leave, experience shows that workers take what they need, and that is on average less than the maximum allowed. For example, Massachusetts allows up to 26 weeks, and median leave lengths were 12. In Washington, the entitlement is 12 to 18 weeks, and the average has been less than 8. There is no evidence that Minnesota workers are less committed to their employers or coworkers or more inclined to abuse their benefits than those in other states. In fact, one could argue the opposite with nation-leading workforce participation rates. And while there has been significant discussion about workforce shortages and improved benefits, a November 2021 survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation found only marginal progress in the percentage of workers with access through employers, leaving the vast majority of employers and workers without this important form of support. Similarly, the Society for Human Resource Management 2022 survey, as well as the most recent National Compensation Survey, show little movement with the vast majority of workers without access to paid family and medical leave. So luckily, Minnesota has the opportunity to build on and learn from the experiences of several other states, some of which started their programs in the heat of COVID and others which have been around for decades. These lessons are the foundation of House File 2. With that, I'll stop and be available later.
I also have Commissioner Grove. Commissioner, welcome to committee. Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thanks for having me this morning. Excited to testify on behalf of this bill. And I come to you today, as mentioned before, both as a commissioner of our state's Economic Development Agency, but also as a father of two six-year-olds who, when they were born 6 years ago, and I was working at a company that had paid family medical leave, I was able to take some time off and be with them. And, you know, I can't even imagine having raised our kids, especially in those early months, without my wife and I having the time to take and be with them in those early days, which is so critical to their growth, to our family bonding, and to our family unit. So this is a program that I think is long since overdue in our state, and we as a department want to make sure that we get it right. I think today we wanted to talk about this policy in the context of making sure that it becomes one of the best policies that we can use to improve and support lives for Minnesota's families and Minnesota workers, and that we focus on learning from other states and making sure that this is an extraordinary new program for our economy. As you know, about 8 states currently have paid family medical leave programs. We have another 4 that are currently building them. We're in touch with so many. We'd be the 13th state to put one into play. And as the bill is currently written, we'd be the first state ever to turn on both the benefits and the tax collection at the same time. Most states have started the tax collection, and a year later they start paying benefits. Given our historic surplus, we have an opportunity to do both at the same time, which we're very excited about. This is a program that is clearly, clearly good for women and families. It improves physical and mental health and decreases infant mortality across the board. From a workforce perspective, women, when they had paid family medical leave for their kids, 10 years following the birth of those children, they are 20% more likely to still be in the workforce than those mothers who did not have paid family medical leave. So this is a huge opportunity to create a retention and an economic growth opportunity for any woman who can take that moment at a really, really critical window in her child's development and stay in the workforce. And of course, for young kids, as we all know, those first 3 years of life, those first 1,000 days, are scientifically proven to be the most important days for brain development. Those are the windows of time where being with your parent, having access to that kind of care, that sort of exposure is really important to growth. And of course, these are our future workers in our state. And so investing in that period of time in their lives is really important. This is also, quite frankly, an equity issue. Most big managerial and professional companies offer these programs. Like I said, I came from Google and had this program myself when I was there. But it's the small businesses, like my dad's small landscaping company and the many other small businesses in our state, who could never dream of offering such a benefit with the size of their workforces. And it's also a policy that disproportionately does not today help those in Black and Brown communities or in greater Minnesota. When you look at those who have access to these policies, that's where the gap is. And so I think this is definitely an equity issue as well as we look at this. And lastly, I'd just say this is good for the workforce and for business. We think about this as an exceptional economic development tool. This is about Minnesota's competitiveness. And to be a state that, compared to those on our borders, has this policy at a time when demography is not our friend, when we are losing workers across the country and to other states, having a thoughtful paid family medical leave policy in place would truly differentiate Minnesota compared to our peers. And we do believe that it could be good for business. And we say that because we've seen, as this policy has unfolded in other states, the kind of feedback the businesses have given. In California, a state that has a paid family medical leave program, a survey of businesses found sky-high reviews for the program, off the charts positive reviews as it relates to productivity, turnover, profitability, and company morale. This is a policy that has been proven to work. And if we can do it and the way we've contemplated here in the coming months, we have, I think, a great chance of being successful. So, again, I'm here to testify on behalf of the bill today and just say that we think this is a basic and fundamental opportunity to help Minnesotans when life happens to them. It's pro-family, it's pro-worker, it's pro-business, and we should get it done this legislative session. So thank you to the leadership of Representative Richardson and those on this committee as we contemplate this program, and I look forward to the discussions in the weeks ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Grove. We have a long list of testifiers scheduled for today. Each testifier will have up to 3 minutes to give their testimony. The committee legislative assistant to my left here will keep track of your time. When your time begins, he will hold a green card. When you have 30 seconds remaining, he will hold a yellow card. And when your time is up, he will hold a red card. And I want to thank you for your time. That's the testifier that is posted on the agenda, and I will announce the testifier and the next person on the list. So please be ready when it's your turn to testify. First on the agenda is Dr. Eileen Crespo, and then Alicia Jackson.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for record and proceed.
Dr. Eileen Crespo for the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. As a pediatrician and parent of 3 children, I recognize the importance of the first few days and weeks of a child's life. Babies are born to learn. Forming trusting relationships with their families and their caregivers begins immediately after birth. as Commissioner Grove just mentioned, you may know that a child's brain grows more quickly in the first 1,000 days of life than at any other time. Paid family leave provided during the first 6 to 12 weeks after birth allows families to establish critical bonding that cannot wait. As of July of 2021, 9 states and the District of Columbia provided mandated paid family leave. Too many states, however, do not. Minnesota now has the opportunity to join the states that recognize that income stress added to the stress of bringing home a newborn creates a suboptimal environment at a critical window for brain development. Lack of paid family leave also has a disproportionate impact on disadvantaged populations in this state who often don't have access to these benefits. In fact, 93% of low-wage and 94% of part-time workers have no access to paid leave. Additionally, more than 65% of Black and 75% of Latinx parents are ineligible or unable to afford unpaid leave. No family should have to choose a paycheck over bonding with their newborn. I implore Minnesota lawmakers to support paid family medical leave for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Crespo. Next is Alicia Jackson, and then followed by Kevin Brown.
Ready. Hi, I'm Elijah Jackson. I'm the owner of First Class Cleaning. I am also a leader at Main Street Alliance. My business is in post-construction cleaning, along with janitorial, which is a high physical role. A few months ago, I had a gallbladder surgical removed, which is a major surgical procedure. I was scheduled to be out of work for 3 weeks, but because of the physical nature of my job, I had to take off an extra week and a half to recover. Not having access to paid medical leave at this time set me behind because I wasn't able to be in my business 100% at a time. I also have 2 children that rely on me as a single mother. I went from working every day, all day, to doing completely nothing, but my bills are still due. If I was working in corporate America, I'd be able to take medical leave or even get assistance. Working as a small business owner required me to perform many different jobs in one, and the business cannot run without me. I did not have any type of support. Do I shut my doors and take care of my health, or do I continue to show up and sabotage my recovery? Fortunately, with Universal Paid Family and Medical Leave Program, that will offer 12 weeks up to paid medical leave, 12 weeks of paid family leave, and works like other states' unemployment insurance program. That is not a question I will have to answer anymore if I do have to go out and do any medical procedures or family leave. Paid family and medical leave is good for my business, it's good for Minnesota, and it's the right thing to do. I urge the committee to move Senate File 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, followed by John Reynolds.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Brown, owner of SmartSet, a 37-year-old graphic design and print shop in Northeast Minneapolis. We're a certified B Corp and union shop and members of Metro IBA and Main Street Alliance. On New Year's Day, my senior designer had a baby. Like all new moms, she wanted to spend time with her newborn, but also continue in her 5-year career at SmartSet. We discussed how best to balance these two important goals, and before she left, I agreed to pay 3 weeks maternity pay, along with her three weeks paid vacation, so she can take 6 weeks off and not have to worry about how to pay her bills. This was not an easy thing. Paying her as well as her replacement puts a huge financial burden on the company at a critical time of year. Paid family and medical leave, funded by a small payroll tax, would allow me to keep my labor costs the same while an employee is out on leave. About 8 years ago, my mother died of a sudden heart attack, and because my father had Alzheimer's, he moved to Minnesota so we could care for him. He would only live another 4 months, and while I would visit him on my lunch hour and after work, I think a lot about being able to take time off to spend with him. At the time, the business just could not afford the unexpected expense of hiring more help. Some groups are here to tell you how terrible a financial burden this would be on small business owners. But the cost of training a new employee is roughly $1,800 and much more in highly skilled jobs like ours. The current system creates greater turnover and increased costs in hiring and training, particularly in today's very tight labor market. I don't hear a lot of small business owners protesting the unemployment tax. We all realize the benefits outweigh the cost. How is this any different? Small businesses account for half the jobs in the state of Minnesota and are the biggest creators of new jobs. Yet we compete with the largest corporations for talent, and they are able to offer better benefits because of their larger pool of enrollees. Isn't it time to level the playing field for small businesses and allow owners and employees to take paid time off for illness and the birth of children? I urge you to support small business and vote in favor of Senate File 2. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Don Reynolds, followed by Jason Dunick. Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members. I'm John Reynolds, State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Minnesota. We represent 10,000 small businesses in every corner of the state and every industry. I appreciate the chair taking time to meet and review our members' concerns earlier this month, and I look forward to doing the same with Representative Richardson soon. NFIB opposes House File 2 in its current form. This proposal is an outlier in many ways among the states that have a PFML program, particularly in its treatment of small business. First, the program's payroll tax is an added burden at a time when Main Street is still struggling. It amounts to about $1 billion to start, and we believe the cost will rise quickly, perhaps even double in a few first few years like Washington states. Many other states that created PFML programs in recent years set a hard cap on the payroll tax at around 1% of wages. This provides cost certainty for employers and employees alike, and 7 of the 11 PFML programs are either entirely employee paid or only require the employer to share part of the medical premium. Second, most states allow small employers to opt out of the employer share of the premium while still allowing employee access to the program. This includes Washington, which allows small employers with fewer than 50 employees to opt out of the premium. Those who opt out are not eligible for the small business assistance grants, which we think is a fair trade. The small employer opt-out also corrects an unintended cross-subsidy from small employers to big businesses. In Washington, employees of big businesses have consistently used PFML at higher rates compared to their share of the workforce, whilst employees of small businesses have used PFML at lower rates. Third, the combined benefit duration of 24 weeks exacerbates one of the biggest challenges facing small employers right now. A very high percentage of our members can't find workers. I don't think that's exclusive to our members. I think that's universal. In many cases, small employers will experience additional uncompensated losses because they won't be able to fill vacancies. Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, and Oregon all offer 12 weeks of medical and 12 weeks of family leave or less. However, they cap total leave in a year at 12 weeks plus 2 to 4 additional weeks for limited circumstances like complications related to childbirth. Delaware also exempts very small and seasonal employers from the program entirely, recognizing the unique nature of their economy. Lastly, we just encourage members to consider that just as it's not the fault of an employee who gets sick and needs time to get better, it's not the fault of a small business that this is going to pose serious financial and workforce management challenges. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I look forward to working with you all on ways to improve this bill for small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Next is Jason Dunick, followed by Alina Mahia. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jason Dunick. I'm from Princeburg, Minnesota. I'm a partner in a family-owned business that is in the horizontal construction. We have been in business for nearly 100 years. We take huge pride in our talented workforce. Mr. Chair and members, one size does not fit all. This applies when you go to Macy's department store to try on new clothes, and it applies to laws that created in the House of Representatives. Our industries, highways in the state of Minnesota, the talented, skilled workforce that it takes to run a paver, a motor grader on our construction crews takes years to learn. This law is enacted. We will not find talented workforce off the bench in a time frame that is conducive to 32 weeks of road construction season. We are all aware that the current labor market is very, very tight. If our operator came to us, for an example, and said that he needed 24 weeks off because of family situation in May, that constitutes 75% of our entire construction season. We simply would not be able to find a replacement for this person in the current employment climate. I would urge more work to recognize the many different seasonal businesses and get a better understanding of the current industries such as construction, hospitality, and trucking. Small business with less than 20 to 30 employees would be greatly affected and should allow it to be opt-in rather than be forced in. Please listen to business that have real experience in this field. Failure of government programs is largely due to simply lack of knowledge about particular industry or trade. Again, one size does not fit all, folks. I would ask you to vote no on this law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunick. Next is Alina Mejia, followed by Isaac Russell. Please identify yourself for record and proceed.
Hi, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ileana Mejia, and I work at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, a nonprofit state association with over 2,300 member nonprofits across the state. Minnesota nonprofits play an important role in Minnesota's communities, providing essential services, employing local residents, and improving qualities of life with almost 392,000 employees and over 9,000 employers. Our nonprofit sector represents 14% of the Minnesota's workforce, compared to 10% at the national level. Minnesota Council of Nonprofits support paid family and medical leave legislation. This program is one step towards supporting nonprofit strength and sustainability as viable and competitive employers. Providing living wages, offering strong benefits, and supporting staff will be crucial for the sector to attract and retain professionals who work tirelessly to meet the rising demands of our communities. Paid family and medical leave will advance economic security in both and reduce both income and racial disparities. The majority of nonprofit workers in Minnesota are between 22 to 44 years old, which is when folks start thinking about having a family. And about 75% identify as women in the nonprofit sector. Lower income Minnesotans and workers who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color are more likely to lack access to these benefits and have fewer resources to get through times of illness or a need for family caregiving. Having to choose between keeping a steady paycheck and supporting the needs of one's family disproportionately impacts women and Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as evidenced by the COVID-19 pandemic. This program helps to ensure small nonprofits are able to minimize hardship of losing a staff person for medical or parental leave by not having to choose between paying the staff on leave, thereby increasing their chances of returning to the workforce, and hiring someone to temporarily cover the work. Our sixth COVID report from November 2022 shows that there is still an increase of 60% of nonprofit survey respondents had an increase of demand in services for 2022, which is increasing from our previous impact reports. Nonprofits are having difficulty hiring and retaining staff due to financial climate and competition from the government and private sectors. Small organizations will benefit from systems that will allow smaller payments and installments for future needs rather than having to pay the larger sum in someday in the future. This legislation would provide many benefits to employers, employees, and Minnesota overall while reducing racial disparities. On behalf of MCN and our members, we ask you to we ask the committee to please vote in favor of House File 2.
Thank you, Ms. Mejia. Next is Isaac Russell, followed by Lauren Scolthor. Please. Mr. Russell, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Isaac Russell. I'm the Director of Public Policy at the Center for Economic Inclusion, where we work to break down structural barriers to create inclusive and equitable regional economies in the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Richardson, our allies in the Paid Family Leave Coalition, and Chair Zhang for your perseverance, dedication, and commitment to making Minnesota a more equitable place. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2. When we look at those who have access to paid leave, Black, Hispanic, Asian, and Indigenous workers disproportionately do not. This leads to some startling statistics. Over 6 out of 10 leaves needed by black women are not taken or is unpaid, which leads to $3.9 billion in lost wages per year. For black workers overall, only 43% have access to paid or partial paternity leave as compared to 50% of their white counterparts. And black and Latino mothers report being laid off or having to leave employment at higher rates than white women after giving birth. But to recognize the humanity at the center of the paid family leave movement, I need to look no further than my own family. My sister was pregnant with her second daughter. Due to internal restructuring, she had to reapply for her position one day before before going on maternity leave. She retained her position, but only had 1 week of PTO. My sister took 7 weeks of unpaid leave. She got behind in bills, incurred debt, and financially had to rely on an abusive partner. This is not the position a single mother awaiting her second child should be in. House File 2 is but one tool we need to create a truly inclusive economy in Minnesota, and we're happy to stand in support.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Next is Ms. Shuckhorst, followed by Andy Welk. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lauren Shuckhorst, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, which represents more than 6,300 businesses and 500,000 employees, and leading the United for Jobs Coalition, which represents nearly 80 organizations and their hundreds and thousands of employees, in opposition to legislation imposing a significant paid leave mandate on Minnesota's employers and House File 2 as drafted. I say this on behalf of an organization where over 80% of our members already offer paid leave in some form. Minnesota businesses don't have the luxury of considering tax and labor policies, state spending, and regulatory decisions separately in a vacuum. Employers, especially small and mid-sized businesses, are at risk of a multitude of paid leave and other workplace mandates, restrictions, and regulations currently under consideration this session. Minnesota is already considered a high-taxed, highly regulated, high-cost-of-business-doing state. As it stands now, Minnesota ranks 45th, nearly the last in business tax climate. So we have less ability to raise taxes than many other states and compared to states that have already enacted forms of the paid leave program. Minnesota's GDP and job growth have been below the national average for the past 5 years, and the state's November budget forecast predicts flat job growth in 2023 and 2024. The paid family and medical leave provisions in House File 2 place a new payroll tax on every employer to create a broad new state-run insurance program that will collectively cost the Minnesota business community nearly $1 billion annually, while creating a mechanism for an employee to be away from their job for up to 24 weeks each year. Not yet to say exactly how stackability with the proposed paid sick and safe time mandates and existing FMLA obligations will be reconciled. In addition to the direct cost on employers, the proposal will take years of development and over 300 state FTEs to start, implement, and administrate. This is a big, complex proposal, and we have significant concerns with the way it is drafted and structured in terms of workability. We are also very concerned that an outside actuarial analysis has not been conducted. Based on preliminary fiscal review, without modifications to its initial scope and design, we expect the program to run into solvency issues. In fact, in the DE amendment, the payroll tax rate has already increased from 0.6% to 0.7%, and there is no limit under the bill to cap this payroll tax. Businesses can't adequately prepare for this type of uncertainty and tax liability, as we recently saw with the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund solvency crisis. Cost compliance and operational impacts of mandates such as the one today put pressure on employers, particularly small employers. Increased costs further limit resources available for employee compensation, job growth, and expansion in Minnesota. In its current form, House File 2 would impede Minnesota's competitiveness and economic growth. So we hope that legislators will continue to work on the proposal in order to address issues relating to its cost, its size and its scope, and the workability of its construction. We appreciate our opportunity to share these concerns with the committee today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Shuckhorst. Next is Andy Welk, followed by Taylor Hughes. Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and my friend Vice Chair Brand. My name is Andy Wilkie with Greater Mankato Growth, the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Organization, serving 900 members, including businesses, cities, counties, colleges, universities, and our local school district. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Greater Mankato is a growing, dynamic Greater Minnesota metro hub with a large trade area including 22 counties in southern Minnesota. A couple of highlights. Among all greater Minnesota metros, Mankato has the highest rate of retail spending per capita. We are home to more than 25,000 college students, and we are the green seam. Agriculture is at the core of our economy. More soybeans are processed in Mankato than any other city in North America. To the proposal before us, all of our members sympathize with many of the goals of this legislation. However, they are very concerned about several elements in its current form. On its face, it represents a vast new multi-billion dollar program that imposes a new tax at a time when our state has an $18 billion surplus. It also imposes a significant administrative burden on all employers, large and small, private and public, many of which are small business owners who wear many hats just trying to survive each day. Further, and most important, this bill will further interfere with an employer's ability to tailor benefits that meet the unique needs of their workplace. A one-size-fits-all approach ignores the diverse needs of each employer across the state. Employers in Mankato are already meeting the moment, investing in their employees and increased pay and benefits during what is the most challenging labor market since World War II, all while managing the highest level of inflation in my lifetime. Our members understand that their employees are the most valuable resource. They're doing everything they can to provide their employees with the benefits they can afford. As currently written, this bill would create an expanding snowball of taxes. In other committees, we've heard that our local government partners, cities, counties, schools, are facing yet another unfunded mandate that will likely lead to increased property tax levies. The result, business and property owners will get hit with increased taxes, not just once on their payrolls, but an additional four or five times with increased property taxes. Minnesota has much to be proud of, but future success is not guaranteed. Adding burdens and barriers to employers could have negative unintended consequences on future growth. We urge you to work with business, industry, and all of your colleagues here in the House to improve this bill to avoid creating undue burdens for employers, especially small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkin. Next is Kayla Hughes, followed by John Bender. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kayla Hughes, and I live and work in Minneapolis. I'm a mom of two, an eight-month-old, and a three-year-old, and a social worker. I also specialize in postpartum mental health. Every day, I hear from my clients about their postpartum mental health struggles. Too often, these struggles are exacerbated by inadequate paid family leave. My clients, like the vast majority of Minnesotans, are faced with the impossible decision between losing a paycheck and caring for their baby. Data from nearly two decades of research indicate that having access to paid family leave contributes to fewer low birth weight infants, fewer infant deaths, higher rates of immunizations, higher rates of breastfeeding, improved mental health for parents, and better long-term educational achievement for children. The implication of this research is that paid family leave is an intervention for improving parental and child health and also for reducing long-term inequities. This work is also personal for me. As a new mom, I struggled with postpartum anxiety and depression. I was fortunate to have access to 15 weeks of paid family leave through my former employer, a privilege that most Minnesotans do not have. I strongly believe without that paid family leave, my mental health and bonding with my baby would have been jeopardized. The privilege to utilize paid family and medical leave shouldn't be an option afforded to only some Minnesotans. Our budget surplus represents an opportunity to make our communities stronger by making paid family leave a reality for us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hugh. Next is John Benda, followed by Casey McGregor. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is John Benda. I'm a leader with Isaiah. Thank you, Chairman Zhang and committee for hearing my testimony. I'm a retired teacher. I taught for 41 years, the last 27 in St. Paul Public Schools. In 1986, my wife and I were expecting our first child on August 8th, which would have given me weeks at home with my wife and new baby before the school year started. To our surprise, our baby wasn't born until August 28th, On top of that, my wife had a seizure during her delivery and ended up needing an emergency C-section. Fortunately, they both survived. Our son was born on a Thursday, and I had to be at school the very next week teaching my classes. My wife was quite overwhelmed with trying to heal from her surgery while trying to care for our new son without me there to help during the day. Though this was years ago, others I know are facing this situation today. One teacher I recently talked to told me how she used her 6 weeks of sick leave for her maternity leave and then needed 4 additional weeks, which she had to take as unpaid. Another teacher used up her sick leave for her maternity leave after her baby was born last year. Any further need to miss work, like when her husband and then her mother needed to go to the emergency room, meant taking unpaid leave. All these teachers and more that I talked with would love to have paid family and medical leave. Passing this policy would show that teachers are valued and are encouraged to stay in the profession, given how sorely needed they are. I encourage your support for paid family and medical leave so we can offer this benefit to all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benner. Next is Casey McGregor, followed by Troy Redding. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Casey McGregor. HF2 kills the American dream. This is a photo of a picture of my father's childhood home. 2 adults, 4 young children lived here with no running water or indoor plumbing, no government assistance. I am one generation removed from this level of poor. You talk about poor like it's an idea. Poor isn't an idea. Poor is a lived experience. And listening to you talk about poor, you make it sound like it's this horrible thing. It has its ups and its downs, but we survived and thrived. Small business enabled my family to crawl out of poverty. No excuses, just lots of working. My grandfather was able to get into trucking and slowly build a small trucking company. All of my uncles and father grew up learning parts and how to fix them, became drivers and self-employed. Life is never super easy, but we just worked hard. HF2 prevents this dream from happening. Taxes will soar with no cap on the 0.7% payroll tax. This hurts the gig economy. Uber, Lyft drivers, food delivery, freelance, musicians, etc. Small businesses that are commission-based industries will not be able to afford 2 employees per semi or beauty chair, etc., and cannot afford to leave the chair or semi sit empty. My great fear, when exemptions are offered, they usually benefit the politically connected and the higher educated. Will exemptions be offered? This small businesses always suffer the greatest when this happens. There's a duck on TV that says Aflac, 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 in which I carry and I used it when I had surgery. Why would I need this program? It sees aggressive step over step of government into small business. I am proud to be a small salon owner. Though reading this bill, I would have never opened my business here. And if it passed, me and thousands of others will be forced to consider moving. If you haven't noticed, thousands have already left. Congratulations. Haven't you done enough to destroy small businesses during COVID? Why does the state of Minnesota hate small businesses so much? Please vote no to HFSF2. Give other people like me a chance to work hard and stay in Minnesota. This is an American dream killing bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Mr. Troy Redding, followed by Mindy Fredrickson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thanks for your time. My name is Troy Redding. I own Ally Restaurants, a small independent restaurant company with currently 3 restaurants. Prior to COVID, I had 4. I managed to lose one of them in the process of trying to survive. Obviously, the pandemic hit our industry extremely, extremely hard. We had to endure shutdowns. We had to figure out how to pay people. We had to figure out how to take care of our employees. Excuse me. Nobody argues that family medical leave is important. Nobody argues that it's a benefit that people shouldn't have. My issue with this whole thing is the complexity and the mass amount of overreach that the bill in its current state is affording. Additional taxes at this time are very, very detrimental to a challenging industry already. How can we look at this in its current state, stack benefits, tax employees and employers in order to take care of a small percentage of people? How do we look at this and say Minnesota should lead the way in the size and scope of our program? Please take the time to research what other states have done. How are we going to hire 300 employees to operate the system? How do we look at the key assumptions of six and a half weeks of usage when a state like Washington is averaging 9.5 weeks? How do we look at the cost of this based on those assumptions and think that we are going to do it differently? I support the bill. I support what we're doing and what we want to do. I just do not support it in its current phase and in its current scope. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Redden. Next is Minnie Fredrickson, followed by Corey Anderson. If you are next to testify, please be up and ready to go. Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, committee members and committee chair. My name is Mindy Fredrickson. I own Gunflint Lodge and Outfitters in Cook County, a small family-owned resort. And I am also here as a board member for Hospitality Minnesota. I also come and speak to you not only as a small business person, I've owned my business for 7 years, but I also bring some corporate knowledge and expertise in this area. Prior to buying the resort 7 years ago, I managed the family medical leave program for first Northwest Airlines and then Delta Airlines. So I do have a good significant understanding of these programs. Family medical leave is a very complex program administratively. In my corporate role, I had a team of 4 people. Also, each of our locations, our large locations, such as at the Minneapolis airport, had a leave specialist, also a HR generalist, and a team of a legal team back at headquarters, all that helped manage this program. The program that's currently laid out in this HF2 bill is much more complex than the Family Medical Leave Act at the federal level. And I just think that many of our small businesses are not going to be prepared to manage this program from an administrative standpoint. In addition, FMLA is, you know, we call it the Full Employment for Lawyers Act, right? It's a litigation minefield. So I think that it provides a lot of issues on the back end that small business employers are not really prepared for or understand at this point. In addition, you know, at my corporate role, we overhired by 25%, and we staffed on a daily basis by over about 15% every day, which is something that we could do in a large corporate role where we had a lot of people, thousands of people that were trained to do the same job. In a small business, that's simply not possible. And the Minnesota law, as it's laid out, will have longer leave times, more people eligible, Therefore, I would expect that people are, businesses are going to need to overstaff by close to 50%. There's no temporary staffing agencies on the Gunflint Trail or anywhere in Cook County. Our small businesses, our remote businesses, our rural businesses are not going to be able to administer this program in a successful way. Staffing is the biggest problem that we face in the hospitality industry, and I think that this will merely exacerbate our problem. I've got a lot of other feedback and thoughts about how it applies to a seasonal business. If you have time to talk with me individually, I'd love to, but I see my time's up. I appreciate your time and thank you for listening. Have a great day.
Lori Anderson, followed by Amy Schultz. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Corey Anderson. I'm here representing NAFA, National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, along with MAHU, Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, two organizations with many members in each legislative district and more than 1,000 statewide. I'm the owner and founder of Disability Geek Insurance Agency, specializing in disability insurance, and I've been in the business over 20 years and I have 4 employees. Through the years, we have worked with over 1,200 clients, protecting the income of business owners and their employees, both hourly and salaried. I, along with members of MAHU and NAFA, are opposed to House File 2. As a specialist in this area, I can tell you the private sector has affordable short-term disability products available with very broad coverage for just about every group and individual. With many providers offering coverage for disability income, the market is competitive, so the prices are very affordable. To the extent that the advocates of this bill have run into problems finding coverage, they may need to talk to another agent that has more expertise in these lines of business. The perception of a scarcity is not an accurate representation of our marketplace. What this bill does is put the state government in direct competition with private sector insurance carriers and insurance agents. In fact, this bill is a virtual market takeover by a state agency who has no experience delivering this service or accurately pricing such a product. Most employers already offer either subsidized short-term disability coverage to their employees or voluntary unsubsidized coverage, where the employee has the option to purchase group coverage. To the extent that the employee has not opted for coverage, they are making a value decision on what works best for their personal needs. We recommend the following if you move this bill forward. Leave the private sector to serve the market for short-term disability or medical leave, as it is called in this bill, and provide incentives for employers to provide that coverage to their employees. Mandate those employers with over 50 employees offer short-term disability coverage with tax incentives to do so, and outline more flexible minimum coverage requirements. Let the state concentrate on family leave coverage, since there is not a well-developed private market that will be displaced. Our clients and the public are not interested in another unfunded mandate that creates a $1 billion payroll tax on businesses and their employees. The public likes the idea of coverage. They don't like the idea of another tax shrinking their paycheck in a time of high inflation with the economy moving toward a likely recession. Please vote no. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next is Amy Schultz, followed by Cassandra Liddon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you so much. My name is Amy K. Schultz, and I'm a self-employed adjunct professor and author. I'm a leader with Isaiah, and I live in Minneapolis. Paid family medical leave is essential for Minnesota families. When I was pregnant with my first child, I applied for short-term disability through my employer, but was denied because I had a pre-existing condition, migraines. My employer gave me 12 weeks of unpaid medical leave, so we had only one income. I was on bed rest, and my daughter was premature with jaundice. Along with postpartum depression, I got an infection the first week after she was born. I also had major surgery to remove my gallbladder 6 weeks later. It was a challenge for our family. I'm not alone in my experience. As a former FMLA coordinator for a company with several thousand employees. I was always stunned to talk to mothers who couldn't afford to take much time off for medical leave after having their baby. Usually, these were single moms. They didn't have a choice. As a self-employed worker today, I have no safety net if I have to take time off to care for myself or a family member. If a major medical emergency happened, it could send me into poverty. Paid family and medical leave. Families will not worry about their next meal and how to pay bills. Paid family and medical leave. Dads and moms can lovingly bond with their newborns. Paid family and medical leave will get the newest Minnesotans off in a stronger, safer, healthier direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Cassandra Liddon, followed by Kim Lewis. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Cassandra Liddon. I'm here to ask you to continue to include educators in this incredible bill. I'm an educator at White Bear Lake High School. I was drawn to education because I believed it was a profession that supports family. Early in my career, an administrator told me that I should have my children during the summer months. It was what he did so that he didn't have to worry about time off. Not that we should have to, but if only we could plan exactly when we have our children. Fortunately, my first was born in June. I had the time I needed for appointments and time to adjust. Unfortunately, I was not able to have the same timeline with my younger two. Jackson was born in January of 2020. My husband recently switched careers to law enforcement. Because he was new to his position, he had not yet accumulated time off or parental leave benefits. Jackson was born 5 weeks early by emergency C-section. 3 days after my C-section, I was on my own taking care of our family because my husband had to return to work. My recovery was slow and painful. We had a miscarriage before having our last. I only took 1 day because I knew I needed to save my time off. Riggins was born 6 weeks early by C-section in December of 2021. He was our most premature and his weight was a concern. I had exhausted my sick time with his birth, but he and I needed appointments with our primary care and lactation to make sure that his nutrition was adequate. I had to decide between appointments and unpaid time. Diapers, wipes, and groceries are expensive, and with inflation, we decided we would figure it out without me taking unpaid time. This is not just my story. This is the story of many women in education who return to work without a mother's room or support to pump because they're on a bell schedule. This is the story of women who exhaust their sick time to have their children only to return to work when they need that time to care for themselves, their newborn, and the rest of their families. I'm still a passionate educator despite the challenges of the last 3 years, and I plan to stay, but I hope the next young parent doesn't have to say goodbye to their partner when they're barely out of the hospital. I hope they don't have to pump in a closet and worry about paying their bills or showing up to appointments. I hope that they can enjoy the precious time as a new family with less stress and more security than I had. If this bill is passed, we will be able to better heal and better care for our families. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Kim Lewis, followed by Gavin Hanson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kimberly Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Today, I am also speaking on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, both principals associations, elementary and secondary, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and Schools for Equity in Education. We appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts on House File 2, and we've recently had a conversation, all of us, with Representative Richardson, and we really do appreciate her time. Conceptually, we do agree with the bill. However, as we continue to learn more about this bill, our school boards, administration, and school human resource representatives have questions and three main concerns as it relates to the implementation, cost, and long-term operational impacts to our districts. The primary concern is cost. School boards do not have the authority to levy for the funds that would be needed to cover the employer cost of House File 2. The funds would need to come out of the general fund, in other words, our classrooms. Another question is, how would this bill be implemented and interact with collective bargaining? If passed, would the statewide benefit be a part of the local bargaining negotiations, supersede previous contract negotiations, or both? It's important to note that our collective bargaining process works well and provides an excellent benefit to many groups and individuals in our districts. Finally, due to the nature of the workforce within our schools, there would most likely be a greater need for substitutes, both teachers and staff, which is an added cost as well. Districts are struggling with hiring and retaining substitutes and full-time teachers right now. We know a highly qualified teacher positively impacts the classroom and student learning. We would like members to know today and others to know what a quality education, positive student outcomes, and learning recovery depends on maintaining consistency and continuity and having highly qualified teachers in our classrooms. These are key components to our jobs, which is educating students. To operational challenges, our students are in school approximately 33 weeks. As we understand it, this bill could allow for someone to be out of the classroom for up to 24 weeks. That will impact learning. We plan to continue discussions with the author and hope to discuss things such as authorizing employers to require a partial buy-down of accrued leave and clarifying language regarding the employee chargeback to delineate that employees are responsible for 50% of the premium cost unless an employer opts to have more. Finally, as indicated by the number of organizations I'm speaking on behalf of today, we would respectfully request that this bill be referred to Education Finance to be reviewed by the committee there and to discuss its further impact or discuss its impact on districts. We appreciate the committee's time today and to listening to our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Gavin Hansen, followed by Stephanie Manning. Just identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, staff, and members of the committee. My name is Gavin Hansen, and I am here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership, which represents many of Minnesota's largest employers. Let me first say that the members of the Minnesota Business Partnership support paid leave policies. We support them because it is the right thing to do for employees and their families. In today's ultra-competitive workforce, providing paid leave is essential for attracting top talent locally, regionally, and globally. Our membership already provides very generous paid leave benefits to their employees. Many offer a more generous leave than what is this bill prescribes. However, this bill before you today would make it extremely difficult for these businesses who already offer paid leave the ability to opt out of the state program even if their paid leave benefit program exceeds the minimum requirement that is currently outlined in the bill. These issues include an expansive definition of family, no cap on the 24 plus weeks of leave, and the brief window of 90 days required before eligibility for this program. We are concerned that the paid family medical leave proposal is bad for our employees as currently written. It would disrupt these existing employer benefit offerings, making employees pay a new tax for benefits that are less than they currently receive, and forcing them to go through a new state agency to access their benefits. Paid family medical leave should be a benefit to the employee, and from an employee's standpoint, having to contact a bureaucrat in a state agency to answer questions and access paid leave benefits instead of being able to contact the trusted human resources person where you work is burdensome and unfair to the employee. We respectfully ask the committee to consider that a benefit program like paid leave should be as easy as possible to administer and shouldn't punish employees who already have comparable benefits at their companies. We are prepared to work with you to find a path that provides some level of PFML benefits to those employees who don't currently have access to these benefits, but doesn't punish the employees who do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Stephanie Manning, followed by Dana Bacon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Stephanie Manning. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Utility Contractors Association, or MUCA. We represent over 145 companies and thousands of contractors and suppliers engaged in excavation, site work, and the construction of underground infrastructure, very important, underground, from water, sewer, stormwater pipes, electric, gas, cable, everything you need to live every day. I'd like to ask the committee if anyone has ever heard the adage, Minnesota has two seasons, winter and construction. Our winters already prevent many MUCA member companies and their employees from working year-round. Allowing 24 weeks of stacked paid leave is essentially the entirety of the construction season here in Minnesota. MUCA members are mostly family-owned businesses, small. The construction industry already suffers from a major lack of available workers. removing the company's ability to distinguish themselves from their competition by mandating a one-size-fits-all program flies in the face of basic freedoms to operate your business as needed for the fluctuating construction season. MUCA contractors need workers to accomplish building many of the infrastructure projects you have all promised to your constituents, on time and under budget if possible. For an industry that is already in dire straits when it comes to workforce availability, the proposed bill will do more harm than good. MUCA member companies vary in size. Some have 7 to 10 employees, others have up to 100, a lot of them seasonal employees. All of them want to attract the best workers. The best way they can do this is through the freedom to operate their business, determine their own benefits packages, and distinguish themselves from competitors. I ask you to consider the undue burden these mandates place on business. This will increase costs to employers, employees, and every taxpayer in the state without any real benefit for the overwhelming majority who already enjoy many and varied forms of paid leave. One size fits all is a bad idea. Stacking paid leave is even worse. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Manny. Next is Dana Bacon. Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members. My name is Dana Bacon. I'm from Rosemount, and I'm the Senior Director of State Government Affairs for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society here in support of House File 2. We've heard a lot today suggesting that when people take paid leave, it's for inconvenient reasons to their jobs, but for the people I work for, that inconvenience is their blood cancer, and it doesn't have the courtesy of asking whether you've chosen a job that already has paid leave benefits when it shows up. The cancer patients I work for need House File 2. We don't want to see them choosing between treating their cancer or paying their bills or keeping their homes. These are devastating financial choices that people have to make when diseases like blood cancer strikes. Roughly half of the people I work for are going to face financial hardship if they have a leave of paid leave absence and don't have the benefit. And additionally, more than 40% of working cancer patients have had significant changes in their employment because of their condition. This includes changing to part-time status or retiring early because of their illness. And these changes are more likely to occur among women and among people of color. House File 2 will help Minnesotans pursue medical treatment earlier. It will help them manage that treatment without fearing job loss or financial disaster. It'll help the parents of children who have cancer. It'll help them focus on their child's care in those critical moments. And access to paid medical leave is associated with decreased mortality rates as well. So as the last person I believe testifying today, I'd like to ask you to support House File 2. It's going to ensure that every working Minnesotan, regardless of what benefits they have on the table through their employer, can access paid leave protection when they need it. And I urge you to vote yes today. Thank you.
Thank you. We have several amendments to the amendment before us, and the first amendment is the A2 from Representative Nelson. President Nelson, please move your amendment and explain.
Yes, thank you, Chair Zhang. And the amendment, I'd like to move the A2 amendment. And what this would do is it would be deleting any individual and inserting 50 or more employees. And we've heard quite a lot of testimony today about small businesses being undue burden on them. And they're already offering alternatives or packages that really fit their employees, and I would really hope that we could take this as a reasonable amendment, something that can really allow small businesses to tailor their benefit package to what their employee needs. I think they could probably also be able to opt in if they chose to, but there are other insurances, other things, and as a small business, an employer myself, I've been able to do this with my employees, take in work and specifically tailor the needs and help them, help our employees around their time of need, And I would just ask that this could be considered a friendly amendment, and I would ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Any discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for submitting the amendment. The folks who work for small employers are exactly the people that are most likely not to have access to paid family leave right now. And I'll just point again to the research data that shows that small businesses overwhelmingly support paid family leave programs. In fact, over 70% of them nationally support paid family leave programs. And in this economy where there's a war on talent, and living in a state where there's a paid leave program is making a difference in terms of being able to recruit talent for small business and firms. And we've heard for years from the testimony of small businesses who want to offer this benefit but cannot afford to. And this would create an opportunity to help them compete for top talent and create a pathway for them to be able to take care of their employees as well. So, members, I would ask for a no vote on the amendment.
Okay. Representative Nelson?
Well, I'm thank you, Chair Jong, and you know, I'm sorry to hear that you wouldn't take this. You know, I think it's a reasonable amendment, and I would encourage a yes vote.
Clerk will take the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call voting on HF amendment.
The A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment will now commence. Representatives, please state aye, nay, or abstain when called upon. Representative Chair Zhang.
No.
Representative Brand.
Nay.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Becker Finn.
She's not here.
Representative Fraser.
No.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
No.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Sensimura.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Weens.
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Aye.
There being 7 ayes and 5 ayes, the motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. Next is the A3 from Representative Harder. Please move your amendment and explain.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I would like to offer the A3 amendment, and I request a roll call revote vote.
To your amendment, please.
Representative Richardson and members, the A3 amendment would require an employee to work 180 days instead of 90 before being eligible for leave. Most human resource experts agree that onboarding should take at least 3 months for new hires. For some roles, it could take 6 months or more. A significant number of companies have a 90-day probation period in order for everyone to determine if the hire is a good fit. In some cases, a probation period is extended for additional training. Therefore, certain benefits are not accessible until there is a successful completion of the probation period. Increasing this time to 180 days is reasonable and will allow employers to fully onboard employees before they leave for weeks. My amendment is worker friendly, and I am concerned about employees. If an employee is gone for weeks after the 90-day probation period, you are running the risk of an employee losing valuable skills, which upon returning may require additional retraining. Members, I ask for your support on Amendment A3. Thank you.
Discussion. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Harder, for presenting the amendment. The way the bill is structured, paid family leave is a portable benefit, so it will move with an employee between employers. And the research supports what we already know. One of the biggest concerns people have about taking leave is the concern that they might lose their job. And if people are contributing to a paid leave program, they should be able to take leave when they need it. And the The unfortunate reality is that serious illness and sickness doesn't come on a schedule. And if someone needs to be able to take leave that they've contributed to, we should not be standing in the way of that. And, we continue to talk about the disparities that we see in terms of access to leave. And there would also be disparities if we were delaying access to leave that would target the most vulnerable among us. So I would ask for no vote.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. I thought the amendment was really pretty reasonable from a standpoint of, again, just getting an employee up to speed on sort of how their job function will work. And if something comes up, like as you've mentioned, there could be no intention to that. It's just an illness happens. But if this keeps moving around and an employee keeps jumping from 90 days to one employer to the next employer, takes 12 weeks off and then goes again, maybe they've got a sick grandparent. Maybe they have a person with dementia that will be there for quite some time. As an employer asking this question, because I want to understand how this will work, and the genesis, a lot of this bill has been, this is good for business. Because it's going to stabilize the workforce. They're not going to jump around. This is going to stabilize and be good for us because it's going to keep us with longer employees because of this benefit. I'm struggling with your comments about how changing this 90 to 180 days to allow someone to be a little more stable in the job workforce in that position versus working 90 days, taking 90 days off, which could happen. Working 90 days, taking 90 days off to a different company. Help me understand why that was an unreasonable request to the author of the bill, please.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What it really comes down to with this is that if someone needs to take leave because of a serious medical condition, we shouldn't be in a space of saying that because you've only been here for 90 days, you're not eligible. This is a portable benefit. So someone could be paying into this for years and come to another employer and find themselves in need of experiencing a serious health condition. I think sort of this narrative that has been played out that Minnesotans are going to game the system and jump from one company to another, that's not the Minnesota that I know. In terms of what I have seen, and Minnesotans have strong, good work ethics. I count myself among that, got that from my parents as well. And so I don't sort of subscribe to this idea that people are going to use this as a way to game the system. That's just not the Minnesota I know.
And just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair, is that I understand that, and I think 85% of Minnesotans are like that, too. I think that they're not here to game it, but there are some that will. But what you cannot do with selling the bill to the public here is to say that it will stabilize the workforce. I don't think that this does it. I think this reasonable amendment was very well thought through. It was just making it a little longer after the probationary period. I know where it's going to go. I don't want to waste any more time on this, but you have to make sure that you have to be consistent with your messaging. This is not a job workforce stabilizing bill. This doesn't work that way, and I encourage a yes vote.
Representative Harder.
No further comment. Thank you. I support this bill, so please support it. Thank you.
Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Zhang?
No.
Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Becker-Finn? Absent. Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Hassan?
No.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager?
No.
Representative Ryer?
No.
Representative Sensimura?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Weens?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
Four ayes.
There being seven no's and four ayes, the motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. Next is amendment A5 from Representative Zalesnikar. Please move your amendment and explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Richards. I would like to offer an amendment for A5, the Family Medical Benefit Insurance Program, and I would like a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested.
This A5 amendment deletes the stacking of two 12-week benefit periods at a time when 24-hour care settings and small businesses have record workforce shortages. We're in a war on talent right now. We don't have people applying for jobs. As a nursing home administrator, I'm very confused why we would double the federal FMLA language of 12 weeks when we are crawling, let me remind you, crawling out of a pandemic and risk closure statewide with nothing done yet on changing that atmosphere. I ask members to consider who will replace these shifts. Who will educate our kids? Who will take care of your mom when you need a nursing home bed, an assisted living bed, or you need home care to come into your house? Who will take care of you when you're in a hospital? Who will respond to an emergency if you have any situation of crime or need a police officer? These are all 24-hour positions. We need to assure patients, residents, clients receive care. If you've been to an ER recently, you're going to wait a long time. We all better be prepared to wait longer. There are no caregivers. While we live in a state of hockey, we don't have a second line or a third line when you're doing 24-hour care. There is no backup plan here. HF2 allows both 12-week leaves in a calendar year, which will have unsustainable implications. While good intentions are here, and I understand them, it's going to have statewide implications. We will see closures. This amendment allows for 12 weeks versus the possible of 24 weeks. So I ask the author, I ask you to make serious consideration on this first implementation of a bill to not have stackable benefits. I'm changing a word, and to or, to help save our state and save all of us so we have caregivers when we need care. Thank you very much.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Selesnikar. We have data here in Minnesota that shows that those who currently have access to paid family and medical leave, the vast majority of those folks don't take any leave during the year. And for those that do, they're not taking the maximum that's available to them. In fact, here in Minnesota, the average leave is about 6 weeks. And we can also look at the research of other states, and it supports the fact that for those who need to take leave, they are often taking less leave than they have available. You know, I said this before, Minnesotans have strong work ethics, and on the House floor earlier this week, we talked about the strong work ethic of Minnesotans and how they power businesses. And, you know, just as we extend lifelines to businesses, we need to do that to workers as well. I trust Minnesotans and don't subscribe to this notion that Minnesotans don't work hard. And I would recommend a no vote, Mr. Chair.
Representative Selesnikar.
Thank you. I'm disappointed, and I hope people consider this. I've lived this for 40 years in 24-hour operations. And I ask if you have asked the care providers. I just talked to an ER doctor yesterday. They just lost 7 nurses. And they say it's worse now than the time of our pandemic. Worse conditions. So we are not going to have care when we need it. We need to hit a pause button and get this right. I urge members to support this amendment. Thank you.
Clerk, take the roll.
Chair Zhang?
No.
Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Becker-Finn, absent. Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Hassan?
No.
Representative Hemingson-Yeager?
No.
Representative Ryer?
No.
Representative Sensimura?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Weens?
Aye.
Representative Selesnikar?
Aye.
There be 7 ayes and 5 ayes. The motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment is the A7 for Representative Baker. Please move your amendment and explain.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'd like to ask for a roll call to the
requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, we're creating a new insurance program. It's been sort of identified as sort of like our unemployment insurance program here. What's different about this, though, is we don't have a backup plan if another COVID hits us in a few years where we get wiped out of a fund that you're trying to build up and employers are trying to build up, and we don't have the backing of the federal government like we do with unemployment insurance. My question is, when you want to launch a business-changing mandate that is very progressive and has got a lot of issues that we're trying to get through, the one thing that I want to make sure is thought through this on this bill, Representative, is have you had it analyzed by real actuarial companies? So what this amendment does, to cut to the chase because we're running out of time, my A7 amendment just requires the bill before it's deployed, before it moves out, after the governor signs it and everything's moving forward, that it requires an actuarial analysis to be done. And I hope that you find that as a really smart idea to make sure the 0.7 is the right number, that we've got the ability to sustain this insurance program without the burden of being all on either taxpayers or the backs of businesses and their employees. I hope I can count on you for that support.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. Some states, which was mentioned earlier, such as Washington, started their program with a very low premium, and they're now adjusting upwards. We definitely have the opportunity to learn from those case studies, and the best data that we currently have is related to the cost modeling from the U.S. Department of Labor. This bill is also distinct in that it's using funds from the surplus to help shore up the program. There is absolutely nothing that would prevent us from doing an actuarial study down the line. But I would say that should not be done at the expense of delaying benefits for Minnesotans and impacting the financial security of Minnesota families. So Representative Baker, I'm happy to talk more with you about that, but I wouldn't support delaying benefits being paid to Minnesotans, especially in light of the fact that we are contemplating using a significant portion of the surplus to shore up the program. But happy to continue that conversation. But this amendment and this form, I would not currently support. And I also hear what you're saying about another COVID or another pandemic coming down the road. And I think the lesson learned from that as well is that we would also need federal intervention if there were to be another pandemic that would come down the road of that nature.
Representative Baker.
So what you're saying then is the federal government backing this up if something like COVID happened again in this particular bill? I didn't see any language in there because I don't see any backing of the federal government.
Representative Richardson.
What I'm saying is that we have lessons learned from what happened in COVID. We knew that we needed to work together at the state level and federally. And if we have something that is going to be as impactful as COVID, I would assume that we would continue to take care of each other because that's what we do as Minnesotans, and that's what we do in the United States of America. Thank you.
Representative Richardson, you should never assume anything around here. You know that. I mean, this is bad legislation if you are assuming things. And if we don't get the details right here, once this thing leaves the station, you can't put it back. That's the problem, and we need to make sure we get this right. You're the author of the bill, and I would have thought that of all these ideas we're trying to bring to you, this double check to make sure we got it right would be the one you would take. It's the one that we can actually say then to businesses, we've done the math, we've got this third party, this smart insurance group that does this. This is what they want to do. This is where you can at least sleep better at night knowing that you've had your checks and balances. The levers were all checked. I get it. And I'm looking forward to members voting on these bills and how we are talking about this in our districts, about how you can simply ignore the fact we're trying to get this right. This year is different. It's going to pass. We're literally trying to make it so that it's a workable bill, a workable mandate on businesses and employees. And we have to start right here. This is the first committee. This is our most important bill of the entire year right here. And we all know that. And we need to take the time to do this right. And if this takes an extra 6 months, I don't know what it is. But I think it's worth it to all the companies. You want to have one size fits all. What will that look like? So I'll stop there, Mr. Chair, and we can take the roll. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Baker, Representative Richardson.
You know, I would just say that this is a bill that we've been working on for a number of years. This bill was being worked on before I even joined the legislature. So this is a long-term conversation that we have been having in the state about the need for paid family leave. And Representative Baker, to the underlying point of this, I'm not disputing the fact that an actuarial study could be done down the line. Where I disagree with you is that we would continue to deny and to delay benefits to Minnesotans that would further disrupt folks who are already hurting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But to that, I'm sorry, one more comment, Mr. Chair. But
last comment.
Thank you very much. But to that, I'm just saying that once it gets out there, you can't stop it. And 45% of this committee has never seen or heard of this bill before. You can talk about it being around for 3 years. Almost half the committee has never seen this before. We have to take the time to make sure that we question these things and take the time to properly do this. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time.
Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Zhang?
No.
Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Becker-Fenn, absent. Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Hassan?
No.
Representative Hemingsing-Yeager?
No.
Representative Ryer?
No.
Representative Sensimura?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Weens?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
Five.
Everybody, 7 no's and 5 ayes. The motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. The next is the 8-8 amendment from Representative Weens. To your amendment, to explain.
Chairman Zhang, Representative Richardson, I move A8 and request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
This is a reasonable amendment which provides certainty and safeguards and would cap the annual premium rate of adjustment at 5%. Why? Well, we've all been through a pandemic. Our businesses have suffered. They've been stressed. We've had the Great Resignation. We have a record surplus, and many of our businesses contribute to that surplus, and instead of benefiting from that, there's a new program. And this new program is unknown, and many of them feel that they're in an economic prison and how to get out and how to survive. We're in workforce, and in workforce, we're concerned about Minnesotans that are in the workforce, and there's no better way for half of our workforce, which works for small businesses, to feel a sense of pride and dignity in continuing their work with their businesses. And those businesses can provide in a growing world-class business environment here in Minnesota. And as Commissioner Grove mentioned, we want to do what's good for business because we want to grow businesses. That's really the business of Minnesota. And in doing that, we need to have some knowns. A no cap, which the bill currently has, does not provide certainty. And a reasonable way to go forward so that we don't commit, I think, the same inequity with that Washington State did, where the rates doubled within 3 years. We don't want to repeat that. So I offer this amendment as a friendly amendment. And in that the annual rate of premium increase wouldn't be more than 5%. And I would ask you to support this and work with me on it.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As this program moves forward, we should definitely be relying on the cost modeling from the Department of Labor. And just as we discussed, future actuarial studies, but also just again to distinguish within Washington, there's some differences here. One is the infusion from the surplus that we are taking. Two, Washington also started with a much lower rate. And so I think it's going to be important that we're making decisions on what future premiums look like based upon the Department of Labor cost modeling and actuarial studies. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would recommend a no vote.
Representative Weens.
Thank you, Chairman Zhang. Representative Richardson, I would like to work with you on establishing a cap. Maybe it's not 5%, maybe it's something else, but we need to provide for our businesses some certainty. If you're willing, and we've got some more committees to go through, I'd love to do that.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. always happy to have conversations and look forward to continued conversations with you about the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would just ask that all consider this amendment A8 and vote aye.
Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Zhang?
No.
Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Beckerfin, absent. Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Hassan?
No.
Representative Hemmingsinger?
No.
Representative Ryer?
No.
Representative Sensomura?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Weens?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
There being 7 no's and 5 ayes, the motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. Seeing no further amendments to the amendment, we now have the DE1 before us. Chair Richardson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just in terms of some closing comments here, what we have currently before us is an uneven safety net system. And it's not the first time in our nation's history that we've had an uneven safety net system. When I think about this personally, my grandparents were sharecroppers. My mother grew up picking cotton in the fields of Mississippi. Their labor was exploited. Their land was taken. And when Social Security was enacted, it excluded farm workers. So my grandparents were excluded from Social Security. On my dad's side, my grandfather fought in World War II, and he came home and he was excluded from the GI Bill. There's a saying, when you know better, do better. And we know that every person who is working within the state and within this nation at some time or another is going to face illness. And it is important that we have access to a universal program because we value people's humanity. We shouldn't have programs that say that because of who you are, who you look like, who you love, where you live, or what your title is, that you are eligible for leave and others are not. So I recommend that a yes vote, and that we do a vote to ensure that every person who needs leave will in fact get it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I want to make sure, are we planning on doing a roll call to this bill? I'd like to call it if it's not, okay?
Roll call.
But also, I had my hand up a long time ago when Commissioner Grove was here. I had a number of questions for him. He is the voice of business in Minnesota when it comes to the governor's office, as you know, and he made a lot of statements that I have questions about, and he is, I know, no longer in the room. We're running out of time. This is too important, and I think with you and I kind of committing early on in session to really get this thing right and thought through, I'm wondering if you would consider tabling the bill today, Mr. Chair, to allow us to have that discussion. Again, we've got a lot of time left in the session. There's no rush to this. The benefits don't start getting paid until 2025. We've got time. I think that because of the questions we have and yet to not ask, because, again, you allowed us to run a little bit over, which I appreciate. I just am asking, will you table this bill so we can have the time, bring Commissioner Grove back, who has a huge relationship with the business community, and this committee has really kind of had the broad sense of really diving into the details here. So I'm asking that, Mr. Chair, as respect for the minority, so we can hear and talk about the bill more. The testimony's over, but I'm wondering if we can do that.
Lee Baker, I have been very respectful of your time. I originally went with 2 minutes, and you requested for 3 minutes.
Yep.
And I've done that for you. Respectfully, I would like to pass this bill out of committee. We have ample opportunities. This bill is going to go through several committees. And you will have time to speak with the commissioner himself through giving him a call or an email. And also opportunity on the floor to discuss this. And so respectfully, I would decline to table the bill, because I would like to move forward this bill. We have a lot of hearings scheduled for this bill.
Well, thank you for the consideration. I think what's important is to make sure the commissioner is on record of questions being asked, not so much just in my office. So I think it's important for Minnesotans around the state to know what this is and the complexity of it. And again, we've got other questions we didn't get to. But again, members, when you go back to your districts, again, my county, Kanawha County alone, this is a $200,000 bill to the county itself, which will get paid by taxpayers. Representative Brand lives in Swift County. I hope he understands what that cost is going to be in Swift County and Hennepin County and everywhere else. This is real stuff that's going to continue to roll down, It's important to understand this. And what I've heard today was there's a lot of ideas that say this is a good concept. We shouldn't give up on this. I'm not saying this is a terrible idea. But in the details, it's not working for seasonal businesses and for all businesses and one size fits all. So, members, I urge you, when you think about this today, you're voting for this thing to move along with no chance of changing what we brought to the table today, which I thought was very reasonable. I'm just hoping that the majority will listen to these ideas, will consider some reasonable stuff. I'd much rather use the carrot approach of incentivizing people to want to have paid family leave with maybe insurance companies and other ideas that have been floating around. There's a better way to do this. And I think if Minnesotans want to spend a bunch of money on this to encourage this, I think we can find a better way that's not hitting them over the head with a club. And I think that's the difference we're trying to come up to. So thank you for that time, Mr. Chair. I'm disappointed we didn't have more time today, but I understand. And, again, I urge members to not allow this to pass just yet. Let's keep working on it.
We are on a DE amendment, and so Representative Baker, is my understanding you're requesting a roll call for a DE amendment to the amendment?
I'm asking for a roll call on moving the bill out of this committee, yes.
Okay. So we have two votes, so that means that you're asking for the final bill?
Yes.
Okay. All right, on the DE one amendment, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion carries. The DE-1 amendment is adopted. Now on to House File 2 as amended. Before us, I will renew my motion that House File 2 as amended be referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. A roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair John?
Aye.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Becker Finn? Absent. Representative Frazier?
Yes.
Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Hemingsing-Yeager?
Aye.
Representative Ryer?
Aye.
Representative Sensomura?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Weens?
No.
Representative Zeleznikar?
No.
Skip one.
Oh, Representative Baker. Apologies.
No.
Representative Brand.
Aye.
There are 7 ayes and 5 nays. The motion carries. The bill is re-referred. Members, we are adjourned.